Good morning. Welcome to the Bible study. We've been going through 1 Timothy the last couple of weeks. We're up to chapter 5 today. Just for an overview of chapter 4. In the beginning of chapter 4, Paul, he mentions that in the latter times, many will depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. And he talks about that a bit, and he corrects that some of those doctrines there. And then as a response, he has basically there's a lot of practical teaching on for Timothy on things to do. Examples are like verse 13 says, give attendance to reading, to exhortation and doctrine. It's a very practical chapter. So we get into chapter 5. The way I kind of see it, there's basically three different topics that he goes through. The first one is in verses 1 to 2, when he talks about instructions concerning older and younger men and women. He talks about there in verses 1 and 2, for Timothy, how he should relate to them. And then from verses 3 to 16, he talks about widows and how the church should relate to widows. And then from the rest of the chapter, basically, from 17 to 25, he talks about elders. As we can begin in verse 1, I'll read the first two verses there. It says, rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father, and the younger men as brethren, the elder women as mothers, the younger as sisters with all purity. He says, rebuke not an elder. I don't think he's talking about, when he says elder, the office of an elder, like a bishop. He's talking about an older man, basically. He contrasts it with, he says afterwards, and the younger men as brethren. So he contrasts what he talks about in the beginning as the elder. He's talking about simply the older men. He says, he's talking to Timothy, and he says, rebuke not an elder, but rather entreat him as a father. So there we know that Timothy, he was a fairly young man. And he says here he's not to rebuke an elder. And I think what we can get from that is the fact that older men should be respected because of their wisdom, and we shouldn't be quick to rebuke them. He says instead that we should entreat him as a father. And we know from the scriptures what it talks about. I think it's in Ephesians 6, it talks about children should honor their father and mother. And I think we can use that here. And the older men, we should honor them. He's not saying that if he sees an older man going astray or living a life of sin, that we shouldn't correct it, but rather that it should be respectful and it shouldn't be. We should basically deal with them the way you deal with your father, basically. He goes on here, he says, and the younger men as brethren. He says to relate to the younger men as you would to brothers, because they're brothers in Christ. I think there's, for Timothy, I think there's a little more freedom there to rebuke a younger man, because he would have more, he'd be able to relate to them because he himself is a young man. Then he goes on here, says the elder women as mothers, and the younger as sisters. So he says to for Timothy to deal with older women, to do it as he would with his mother, basically. No son who has a proper relationship with his mother would rebuke her with severity. I think this is true for in the church, for older women. He says the younger as sisters with all purity. Basically, pretty straightforward that you'd for Timothy, that he relate to younger women in the church as he would with sisters. Do you have any thoughts on those verses there? I think that's pretty straightforward. Doesn't go into much detail there. As he switches to instructions for widows in verse 3, he goes into much more detail. He's start in verse 3, he says, honor widows that are widows indeed. Other translation would say, honor widows that are truly widows. And he goes on to define what it means by a widow indeed. In verse 4, he talks about, says, but if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to repay their parents. This is good and acceptable before God. Now she that is widow indeed and desolate trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. So there, I think what a widow indeed that he's describing there is a widow that doesn't have family, that widow that is truly alone. Later on, verse 16, he mentions this again. He says, if any man or woman that believes have widows, let them relieve them, and let not the church be charged, that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. So basically, a widow indeed would be someone that's alone, that doesn't have family that supports them. So in verse 3, he says, honor widows that are widows indeed. Go on to verse 4. He says that if any widow have children or nephews, I think most translations would translate, they would say children or grandchildren. And I think I would agree with that. If you look at the Greek word, it talks about the word nephews there, it talks about descendants. So I think that would be accurate. If any widow have children or grandchildren, let them learn first to show piety at home and to repay their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. So first he teaches that if any man or woman that has a mother that is a widow or a grandmother that's a widow, they're responsible to support them. And then he describes what a widow indeed is in verse 5. It says that she that is a widow indeed and desolate basically meaning alone, and trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. I think the reason why he's mentioning this is a widow that doesn't have family supporting her can only trust in God. They can't trust in their family to support them, but they, because of that, they turn to God, they trust in God, and continue in supplications and prayers night and day. And verse 6, he said, but she that lives in pleasure is dead while she lives. I think he's just pointing out someone that is living a life of luxury, and that's their goal in life, is to live in pleasure, is dead while she lives. Now verse 7, he says, in these things give in charge that they may be blameless. But if any provide not for his own, and especially for those of his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. I think here when he says for his own, I don't think he's talking about simply his family. He's talking about for his own widows. If any provide not for his widows in their family, if anyone does not provide for them, especially for those of his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel, worse than an unbeliever. I think the reason why he's pointing this out is because even unbelievers, they know that it's right to support your mother who's a widow. I think this verse is often used in a way that basically, if any provide not for his own family, like a man wouldn't provide for his children and his wife, that he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. And I think that's true. I think we can use it that way, but in the context here, he's talking about widows. Didn't have any thoughts so far on any of this. He goes on here in verse 9, he says, let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old. I had a bit of a hard time trying to understand what he means by being taken into the number. Didn't have any thoughts on that. I basically concluded that he's talking about widows that would be taken into the number would be widows that the church would be supporting. That's the way I see it. There's many commentators would believe that he's talking about widows being taking an office in the church, a certain role in the church. I'm not sure. I don't think that's necessarily consistent with the context here, because he mentions in the beginning of this section on widows, he talks about if any widow has children or nephews, that they would repay their parents. He's talking about relieving widows. And then at the end there, in verse 16, he says that again, that that if any man that believes have widows, let them relieve them, and so that the church can relieve those that are widows indeed. So I think that kind of bookends the section here, and I think that's what most of the context here is about. It's about supporting widows. So that's kind of why I believe when he says, let not a widow be taken into the number, he's talking about widows being taken into the number, the widows that the church would support. The way that the King James words it here is a little bit confusing. It says, let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old. 80 basically 60. So it says, let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old. And then he goes on, he says, having been the wife of one man. He goes on there, mentions a few different things. It sounds like it's in the negative. It says, let not a widow, and all these things that he mentions, that they should not meet this criteria. I think the ESV would say, let's see here. The ESV says, but refuse to enroll younger widows. Wait, that's the wrong verse there. I think the ESV says something along the lines of, let a widow be taken into number that is not less than 60 years old, something like that. It makes it a little more clear that the first thing he's mentioning here, that it's that if you're under 60, that they shouldn't be, the church shouldn't necessarily support them, because I think there's a few reasons. One would be that they would be more able to support themselves through working, and also that they are more likely to be remarried, and then they'd have a husband that would be supporting them. So here he mentions a list of things here. It says, let not a widow be taken into the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man, well reported of for good works, if she have brought up children, if she have lodged strangers, if she have washed the saints' feet, if she have relieved the afflicted, if she have diligently followed every good work. So there we see that a widow that the church would support, that they would be virtuous, basically, that they'd be doing good works. Do you have any thoughts? Anything you want to share?
I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, but just had a question. In verse 10, it says, if she has brought up children. So if she's brought up children, doesn't she have children that are in the preceding verses that are responsible to care for her?
Mm-hmm. I noticed that too. That's one thing that I struggled with, that made it difficult for me to understand what he means by being taken into number. So I'm not exactly sure. I thought about that too. I'm not sure what to think about that.
It almost seems like he's giving a list of qualifications for a widow to have some office. Like, mm-hmm. In previous chapters, he gave qualifications for elders and bishops and deacons, and
yeah.
It almost seems like this is a list of qualifications for widows.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not disagreeing with you. It's just
just a question. This is one section I had a very hard time understanding. Like, for which office is he referring to here? That's one question I would have if he's talking about that. Does anyone else have any thoughts on that?
Well, I've thought about widows a lot, actually. We've had a widow live among us, and her family was a great example of how, as a young family, they worked together. And I can see that if a widow were over 60, for one thing is, once at that age, the children could be scattered abroad fairly far. Some of the questions I always say to myself is, why does it say the things it says in here? Why does it say they have to be 60? But you start looking at a 60-year-old woman who's by herself. But he qualifies that very clearly in godliness, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And he, some of the things I noticed in the scripture, it seems one of the temptations for human beings, really, not just women, but obviously it must be widows, because he makes a note of that, is that it would be a temptation to live off the backs of other people. And not only so, but I think the ramifications of what goes with that can be quite devastating in a woman's life if those things are in play. And I don't think it means you can never support a widow who's under 60.
Yeah.
But I think it means you don't have them on a specific program where you're supporting them. But if you do have godly widows over 60, looks like you ought to consider it, right? And use them in the church. And we talk about older women being a great blessing, and we know they are a great blessing. Women with experience, women who have walked through the swamp of life, and they gain a good report.
Amen. Yeah, I'd agree with that. Does anyone else have any thoughts? I think there are different commentators that would believe that he's talking about a certain office in the church, that they would say he could be talking about a deaconess, that they would, a widow that would be dealing with a lot of the more things in the church, that physical thing, physical needs that the church needs. I'm just not sure. I'm not sure if there's enough in the context here that would convince me of that. But I'm definitely open to it. Then we go on in verse 11. It says, "But the younger widows refuse, for when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, they will marry, having damnation because they have cast off their first faith." I want to read this in the ESV. I think it clarifies it a little bit. ESV says, "But refuse to enroll younger widows, for when their passions draw them away from Christ, they desire to marry, and so incur the condemnation for having abandoned their former faith." I had a hard time understanding these verses here. I think what he's saying is that the younger widows, that they should be, that the church shouldn't support them for a few reasons. Number one, he says that for when they have begun to wax wanton against Christ, or grow careless against Christ, I think, that they will marry. And then if they marry, then they will no longer be in need of support from the church. As they will marry, having damnation because they have cast off their first faith. And some people, if you understand this context as being, he's talking about an office in the church, then the younger widows, they should be refused for that office because they would have had to make when he says they cast off the first faith, that would be, some people think, their pledge to remain unmarried so that they can basically be faithful in that office. And then here he's saying that they will marry and then they'll cast off that pledge to remain a widow. I'm not sure if I totally agree with that. But I think part of what he's saying here is simply that the younger widows, that they are a lot more likely to be married again, and then because of that, they won't need to be supported by the church. So do you have any thoughts on these verses here? Because it goes on here in verse 13, I think this is very similar to what Alvin was saying. He says, "And besides, they learn to be idle, wandering from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not." I think what he's saying here is that a younger widow that the church is supporting financially, that they learn to be idle because they don't have to work for themselves. They don't have to support themselves. And because of that, they're a lot more likely to learn to be idle and wandering about from house to house. And so it's very similar to what Alvin was saying about that they would get used to living off the backs of others. I think that's a second reason that he mentions here, why they shouldn't be supported. And I think this verse is one of the reasons why I don't think he's talking about an office, is because a younger widow that has an office in the church, has something that they're to do, they're not necessarily going to be idle because they have that that responsibility in the church. And I think this verse kind of supports that he's talking about being supported financially, it makes more sense, I think, that they're more likely to be idle if they're being supported financially here. And he kind of wraps it up in verse 14. He says, I will therefore, or I desire therefore, that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give no occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. So that's his desire for younger widows, that they would get married and bear children, guide the house, and then because of that, they'll be busy and they won't be idle and wandering from house to house. And verse 15 says, for some are already turned aside after Satan. I think he's making, speaking specifically about some people that the people in Timothy would probably know who he's referring to here. He says, if any man or woman that believes have widows, let them relieve them, and let not the church be charged that it may relieve them that are widows indeed. So he wraps it all up. He says, if anyone has widows, that they would support them so that the church wouldn't be burdened or charged, and so that the church would be able to relieve those that are widows indeed. So there he wraps up the whole section on widows. Anyone have any thoughts before we continue here? If not, we can continue. Here, starting in verse 17, he's talking about elders here. It says, let the elders that rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially they who labor in the word and doctrine. Here when he says, here when he talks about elders, he's definitely talking about the office of an elder. You can see that throughout the whole context here. He says, let the elders that rule well. So there, he's already, sounds like it's a description of an elder in the church and not simply an older man. And he says, those that rule well be counted worthy of double honor. I think that'll be double respect. I think also, if you read verse 18, I think he's talking about, I think he could be talking about financial support here. It says, for the scripture says, you shall not muzzle the ox that treads out the corn, and the laborer is worthy of his reward. This verse that he talks about here about you shall not muzzle the ox that treads out the corn is found in Deuteronomy 25, verse 4. And Paul also quotes it in 1 Corinthians 9, verse 9. Basically, muzzling an ox would be done when placing straps or a basket over the mouth of the ox to prevent it from eating while it was threshing. I think the point is that the ox should not be prevented from eating while it is laboring for its owner. The ox is entitled to support in that sense. And I think in 1 Corinthians, he talks about this. He says that this wasn't written for the ox's sake, but it was written for us. And Paul applies it there, and he says, basically says, concludes that if we have sown to you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? So I think in 1 Corinthians 9, he makes it clear that it's talking about that the elders in the church are they have a right to financial support, I think. And I think in 1 Corinthians 9, he has a much broader context. He's talking about, he's using himself as an example that he's denying that right for the sake of others. But I think that he did teach there that they do have that right. And that's what he's talking about here. They that rule well, that they'd be worthy of double honor. Do you have any thoughts on that? If you go on here in verse 19, he says, against an elder, receive not an accusation, but before two or three witnesses. I think when you read these verses here, I think we have to remember that Paul is writing to Timothy, and Timothy is a very specific person in the church there. I think he was a church planter, or kind of, that's kind of the role he had there, I think, more of an apostolic role in the church there. So I think in the context, we have to remember that this doesn't necessarily apply the same way to us as it would to Timothy. But he says here, against an elder, receive not an accusation, but before two or three witnesses. So he's saying that Timothy can expect that there will be accusations against the elders there. But he says that he shouldn't receive it unless there's two or three witnesses. So the elders should always have the benefit of the doubt. You should always have the think highly of the elders unless there's plenty of evidence that what the accusation that is being brought to him is a true accusation. And then he goes on, verse 20, he says, "Them that sin, rebuke before all, that others also may fear." And I think he's talking about elders. Elders that sin, rebuke before all. And this is kind of why I mentioned that it's important that we remember that we're writing to Timothy. I don't think this is something that just any one of us, if we see an elder that sins for whatever reason, that we'd suddenly rebuke before all. I think this is important that he's talking to Timothy, someone who's planting the church there, and that he's setting things in order. So here he's talking about them that sin. I think he's not simply referring to just any sin. It's more an elder that is living in sin, or is a heretic who believes in false doctrines, false teachings, or someone that's involved in gross sins. It says, "Them that sin, rebuke before all, that others also may fear." When he says others, I think he's talking about other elders, that they would fear. And I think, though in the context he's talking about elders here, I think this principle can also be applied to any of us. If there's someone in the church that is living in sin, they should be there's place in the church that they'd rebuke before all, so that they'd be an example that we'd know, that basically so that others also may fear. I think this is applicable in more ways than just what he's talking about here. And in verse 21 he says, "I charge you before God and the Lord Jesus Christ and the elect angels, that you observe these things without preferring one before another, doing nothing by partiality." I think he's reminding Timothy here that when he's doing these things, when he's rebuking elders that sin, that he wouldn't do it with favoritism, that they wouldn't do it with preferring some above others, that it would be without partiality. So then now when we get to verse 22, he says, "Lay hands suddenly on no man, neither be partaker of other men's sins. Keep yourself pure." Does anyone have any thoughts on this verse? I think there's a lot of different interpretations. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this verse here. Up here, Jonathan.
I've always looked at that as the laying on of hands, as appointing someone to an office in the church.
I would agree with that. I think he's still talking about elders here, and he says, "Lay hands suddenly on no man," that ordaining elders, it shouldn't be rushed. He's saying that it's basically that you shouldn't rush ordaining elders. And he goes on, he says, "Neither be partaker of other men's sins." I think what he's saying there is, if you rush to ordain an elder, and if you ordain someone that is living in sin, then you are in a way partaker of his sins, because you ordained someone that's not qualified. And he says, "Keep yourself pure." And verse 23 is interesting, that it feels very out of place here. It says, "Drink no longer water, but use a little wine for your stomach's sake and your often infirmities." A lot of translations have that in brackets, and I'm not exactly sure how that fits in the context. A lot of people think that it was written in the margin when it was in the original scrolls, and that's why it's here. Some people think that while Paul was writing, he suddenly remembered that Timothy was sick, and then he gave him advice for that. I don't know. It feels very out of context here. But he's just simply saying, just simply giving him advice for his sickness that he has. In verse 24, he goes on, he says, "Some men's sins are opened beforehand, going before the judgment, and some men they follow after." Here I think he's saying that some men's sins, they're very obvious. When it's still in the context of ordaining elders, he says some men's sins are very obvious beforehand, that we shouldn't ordain them regardless of any of their talents that they might have. And he says, and some men, they follow after. I think he's saying there that some others, that after you get to know them for a while, some of their sins or what disqualifies them will be revealed afterwards. Does anyone have any thoughts on that? Or anything that we've touched on this morning? He goes on here, he says, likewise, also the good works of some are manifest beforehand, and they that are otherwise cannot be hid. So he's saying in the same way that the good works of some men, they're very obvious beforehand. You'll see the good works of some men. They'll stand out and they'll be very, very clear that they're good men, that they have good works. And he says, and they that are otherwise cannot be hidden. I think he's saying that there's other men that their good works are more behind the scenes, they're more hidden, and you won't see them, they won't be as obvious, but as you get to know them, they cannot be hidden. You'll start to see their good works. So I think in the context here, his encouragement is simply that we shouldn't rush to ordain elders, or I think this also applies for any other office in the church that people would be ordained, saying that we should take our time, because it's a big deal that we make sure that they're qualified, and that we wouldn't ordain someone that's unqualified because of that. So you don't have any thoughts on this chapter or anything that we've, basically anything in the book that you might have thoughts on, any questions or comments? Well, if not, I think that's all for today.